telephone town hall. For those of you who are wondering if you're connected, you are. Right now, you're in what is called listen-only mode, which means that you can hear me, but I cannot hear you. In just a moment, I'll introduce Congressman Tonko and our experts, and then we'll open it up for questions. But first, let me go over a few housekeeping items. If you'd like to ask a question, you can press star 3 on your phone, and you'll be put in line to speak with one of our staff members. They'll hop on and take down your name, where you are in the district, and your question. And then we'll try to get to you as quickly as possible. The next time you hear your name, you'll be live to the entire conference and can ask your question directly to the congressman and our experts. We'll do our best to get to as many questions as possible this evening, so press star 3 now if you'd like to ask a question to the congressman and our experts. Again, press star 3 if you'd like to ask a question to Congressman Tonko. Now, I'd like to turn the conversation over to Congressman Paul Tonko. Congressman?
Well, thank you, Courtney, for facilitating tonight's discussion. I appreciate the professional manner in which you assist us. And I thank everyone for joining us this evening, for your participation and your interaction that will enable us to develop a sound pathway forward. So tonight, as we gather together in this teletown hall focusing on the COVID-19 pandemic, I hope that we will have many facts, much science, and many ideas that will guide us down the path of best response. And to do that, we'll be guided by some very respected experts, individuals who are crackerjacks in their field, who are recognized and respected for their intelligence with their long-term experience in being frontline advocates for what is going to get us through this crisis in the best format. So again, thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to our experts. Let me begin by saying thank you to Dr. David Liebers, who serves as Vice President of Medical Affairs and Chief Medical Officer and Infectious Disease Specialist at Ellis Medicine in Schenectady. Next, we welcome Leslyn E. Williamson. Bear with me here with the alphabet soup. It's a long list. DNP, MPH, MSN, RN, and NEA-BC, and Chief Operating Nursing Officer at Ellis Medicine. We will be joined, I believe, later in progress with Dr. Raymond Colucciello, who not only is interim superintendent for the Greater Amsterdam School District, but has served in that role and as standing superintendent for many districts in the capital region, an expert in education policy and school guidance. And finally, last but not least, we have Mark Egan, who has been in our region for some dozen years as president and CEO of our Capital Region Chamber, which encompasses a great bit of the geography of our district. So welcome and thank you again to our experts. Let me just offer some very brief remarks because I really want this time to be yours. We have come a long way in just a few months, and I think it would do us some good first to recognize the sacrifices and successes that have brought us this far, and especially the ways we have looked out for each other. So I think we need to see that success in each other and certainly be understanding that we have been part of that success as individuals. That said, I'm restless, like all of you, but I also know because the best of scientists and public health experts and, you know, professionals like infectious disease specialists and epidemiologists guide us, and they remind us that our only way out of this is through it. Stepping off this known and clear path will cause delays and greater losses, and even the best predictors are murky. But if we want it over and done with, and if we want to cause the least death and economic and social devastation, we need to be patient, we need to be rigorous, and we need as much testing and tracing and treatment as we can get. We need to follow the science and take the active steps necessary to sustain ourselves and each other during this period. This will lead us to the strongest, most predictable economic recovery that we all seek. So I want to turn things over to you now, Courtney, and let's begin with questions that people have.
Thank you, Congressman. If you're just joining us, if you'd like to ask Congressman Paul Tonko and our experts a question, please press star 3. Again, that's star 3 to ask a question. And Congressman, as we're just getting started and we're reopening, a lot of people are scared, are really scared. What can you say to reassure us, Congressman?
Well, I think that certainly we need to recognize that, you know, as an American public, we have great strength and durability, and we have great intellect. We're doing a lot of things in correct fashion, I think. Scaling up testing and tracing and treatment, maintaining essential services, and maintaining supply chains, and most importantly, bonding together to do what is necessary to combat this epidemic is giving us a good foundation upon which we can at least resolve some of the fright and the uncertainty. A lull now does not mean, however, that we are through it. And I would urge all of us to remain vigilant and careful to avoid unknowingly spreading this disease. But the American people have been through far worse. And in the face of terrible adversity, we always come out of the out the other side stronger as a people and as a nation. So I'm convinced that by working together in a very spirited way and from a government perspective in a bipartisan format, we can get through this together. I don't know if any of our experts want to respond to the fear factor, the fright, the scare that the pandemic causes. But certainly science, I think, can assist us a great deal to resolve those fears.
Congressman, this is
well,
Dave.
Congressman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Was it Dr. Liebers, if you want,
yes,
please?
Yes. I just thought I could add something because I think as a healthcare worker and as a husband, a father, and a son, certainly a pandemic like this does create individual fear and fear, as you know, of what we may do to our loved ones. I think the answer to this is, although you could not produce zero risk in anything, we've shown how well our social distancing strategy has worked. And in a sense, the simple measures that we have taken, understanding that the vast majority of transmission is respiratory transmission, person to person, understanding that, the keeping a distance, wearing a mask in public when you can't keep a distance, hand hygiene, cough etiquette, sensible disinfection, all of these practices add up to greatly reducing risk. Although here at Ellis Hospital, we have taken care of well past 100 COVID patients, some of them very ill requiring intensive care. We have had very little occupational transmission here by adhering to very simple principles of protection. So I think...
Well, that indeed... I was just going to say that indeed is
the way to go. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, was it Mark who wanted to add to it?
Well, yes, I'm just going to, yes, so this is Mark Egan from the Capital Region Chamber. You know, I think part of the question was about the openings that are occurring, and as we all know that we're doing this, you know, a phased opening. So, you know, parts of the Congressman District will start phase two this Friday, and then the other part of the Congressman's District will start phase two next Wednesday. And most of us on the call who are employees somewhere, we might all fall into different phases, but the majority of us probably fall into phase two. And I think building off of Dr. Lieber's comments and our organization, if anyone wants information on the business side and all the phasing, if you go to capitalregionchamber.com, right on the homepage, you'll see where to click. So there's all kinds of resources to help. But I think that the employer community, both for-profits and nonprofits, there's nothing more important to them than people's health and safety. So while I think most businesses and most employees are chomping at the bit to get back to some sense of normalcy as much as we can have, I know in the case of our organization, we're a small employer. We have I think 22, 23 employees. And we had a conference call today to outline to all of our employees really what all of our protocols will be as we open next week. I think there was a sense of relief from them because they had a fear of what's the unknown. And they knew, you know, where we were going to have signage, that our door wouldn't be open to the public, that they would all have masks, there would be sanitizers. So I think, again, building off what the congressman said in his opening comments and Dr. Lieber's, that if we just go about it in a smart fashion and that we're cautious like we have been, I think we can prove that we can conduct business. Some of you might have heard the governor last week in one of his briefings, when they looked deeper at the statistics of people who were getting infected over the last month, a higher percentage of those that were getting infected were not essential workers. They were people who were at home, but maybe not practicing the best, you know, procedures that were outlined. So I think in our employer community, they're going to do all we can to have people be safe. And then, of course, I think for those who are retail establishments and us that are customers, need to make sure that we feel comfortable and we feel safe. And I would say that if you walk into a business and you think there's other customers and you don't feel safe with the environment, my personal advice would be to leave. You know, you can, you know, because I think we each have to look out for ourselves first and our loved ones. And I think that's why we know we're supposed to wear masks, not just to protect us, but more importantly, to protect other people.
Absolutely. Now, just quickly at. Oh, hey, Ray, how are you? Dr. Colicchio, thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. First of all, the thing that has happened in this region and under your direction as well is the collectively working together as school districts and assuring our parents and our students that when we are ready, we're following the guidelines, both national and state guidelines, we will be ready, but we've got a big chore ahead of us in education, and all of us are working to help our students understand that we are here to protect them. We will put a setting, whatever it may be, and we'll not put them in harm's way. So one of the things that COVID-19 has done is it's brought us together as educators in this region and throughout the state. Each week, all of the BOCES superintendents and the superintendents talk about plans and following all of the guidelines. But one of our big tasks when we are ready and we get to go ahead for schools, and we don't know when that'll be, we will be spending a lot of time educating our parents and our students at whatever grade levels they are. They will be safe under our plans, and that's critical for all of our students.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Dr. Colicchio. We made mention of how many districts you have led and how devoted you are as a public servant. So great to have you join us. Cardinal, what do we have next as a question?
Thank you, Congressman. For those folks just joining us, if you'd like to ask Congressman Paul Tonko and our experts a question, please press *3. And Congressman, our next question comes from Laurie. It's an online question. And her question is, over a month ago, Governor Cuomo has called for the federal government to finance a 50% hazard pay bonus for all essential workers. What is Congress doing to act on this and protect New York workers and their families, especially in light of the HEROES Act stalling? Congressman?
Right. Well, thank you. The HEROES Act is an effort, a stimulus bill that will respond to the pandemic, yet another iteration, because we have been encouraged to underpin the economy and continue to invest in the fight against the COVID-19 virus. So what we have included in the HEROES Act is the establishment of a $200 billion HEROES fund to ensure that essential workers receive hazard pay. Now, I believe the HEROES Act shows great respect and appreciation for our frontline and essential workers, people who risked everything so that we could continue to have life as we know it in our communities. And when we think of some of the healthcare workers, the frontline workers, we think not only of people whose healing touch and professional intellect provided for the addressing individuals who had been contaminated by the virus and those who were on their deathbed to be comforted. And in many cases, they served as surrogate family because, as we know, the families were kept away because of the risk of contamination. So for many, many reasons, the HEROES Act responds to all those people that have kept us in working order, including our healthcare workers, our police and sheriff patrols, our firefighters, our transportation workers, our EMS individuals, our teachers, sanitation workers, those who maintain our water treatment centers, all the vital necessities of life that had been provided without any delay or interruption. And so that hazard pay dedicated in the HEROES Act is there to be granted to so many who have served us so well. I don't know if any of our experts want to lend their voice to the hazard pay. If not, we can move on to the next question.
All right, Congressman. If you'd like to ask a question, please press *3. And Congressman, our next question comes from Anthony, who has a question on unemployment. Good evening, Anthony.
Good evening. How are you? Paul, how are you? Mark, good to hear from you.
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us.
I'm in a precarious situation where I have a
Anthony, are you with us? We've lost Anthony, but his question was, how long are they going to continue to pay unemployment, Congressman?
You didn't lose me.
Oh, good.
Oh. Okay.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, Paul, because she said she thought you lost me. I had two lines going because you called me on both lines. I wanted to make sure that I got in for the question. I'm sorry that I've delayed this on you. I apologize. My question is, I'm a small business owner who can't work 6 feet away. I got crushed by this. Certainly with the grace of God, no one in my family has gotten sick. But financially, I'm devastated because I'm in the wedding prom business. And I was up 20%. Now I'm down 75%. And I'm not able to get that back. One of the things that, and again, I have to be hypervigilant. So I'm a delicate balance between protecting my family and providing for my family. And one of the things that I want to know is I can't utilize the PPP in the manner in which they've directed. Because one, I'm shut down completely, and two, the volume won't be there. And three, since they're paying $600 extra, my employees are getting paid double to stay home. What is to incentivize people to come back to work?
Well, I hear your concern. And, you know, as we've worked through the various iterations on stimulus that respond to COVID-19, we have continued to fine tune as we go forward. I can tell you that concern has been shared, but then also on the other side of the coin, we have been impacted by record numbers of unemployed, people who through no fault of their own, who were working at many low-level salaries, were in the midst of this pandemic unemployment statistic. And so we wanted to make certain that we would address their needs also. It was to keep the American households afloat. And, you know, the effort here was to add the $600 in federal unemployment support so that, again, we could assist those record numbers. I would hope that, we will take and watch very closely the demographic profile of what happens with this investment. But I believe in many cases, it's not people staying home. They would want to know that they have the security of a job through this crisis period and be able to continue with their meaningful work after it's over. But again, it's walking a tender balance, trying to make certain that we're there as best we can be for the American households. And we'll continue to monitor the situation. I don't know if Mark, who is with us, who speaks for the business community, if he wants to add any insights for Anthony.
Mark? Well, Congressman, let's go to our next question.
I'm sorry.
We've got...
This is Mark. I was going to respond. I had my phone on mute. Didn't realize it. So I guess just a couple of quick things. Anthony has a lot of valid points. And I think that, a few weeks ago, the congressman had a conversation, and I think I brought up that the $600 piece, I think, made a lot of sense for a window of time. I think as they look at heroes, have to see how do they adjust it, because to the point that was brought up, we've heard it from a lot of members of our, particularly our small business community. They have felt good when they had to let a person be furloughed, that they were not only made whole, but were better off. However, as now they're reopening, if those employees choose not to come back, that sense of security that you talked about, they're really going to lose it, because they're going to have to hire someone else, and it might be good for a window. So I would just encourage you and your colleagues to look at the whole issue and what the real solution would be. And then your other point, Anthony, we're well aware that, and I know the congressman is, that whether it's the PPP or the EIDL program, they work in some circumstances, but not in all. We were fortunate a couple of weeks ago for us to hear from the Department of Commerce and the Economic Development Administration, and I'm not sure, Congressman, if you're aware, but we were invited to apply for a special revolving loan fund that's being deployed as part of the CARES Act to help businesses impacted by COVID-19. So we're going to be submitting an application for a sizable amount of money, millions of dollars, to come to our region. We're hopeful that we'll be awarded that, and we'll be there to help organizations like you who might need to get some financing to help you through. Financing that maybe a bank right now wouldn't provide you, our goal is to have it where no one has to pay any payments or interest for 6 months, and hopefully an interest rate as low as 2%. So that's all part of that CARES Act, as that money is now coming to our local community. So to any business on the line, stay tuned. Our hope is by midsummer we'll know about our award, and hopefully we can get that money out to businesses who really need it.
Let me also add, Courtney, that in the HEROES Act, there are reforms for PPP so as to reach some of the smallest businesses, to provide for greater flexibility, and to also address some of our women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses, which don't have traditional tracking traditional banking, I should say, so that we assist, we do set asides for PPP that would be related to investors, investment funds with small banks, and certainly with credit unions, so that we can provide the most flexibility in the equation. And recently talked to some of the community development fund operators, and they're recommending if we get some resources their way, they would be able to connect directly with people who are small, new startups in the community that are providing jobs and who really need assistance. So again, it's growing through time here and fine-tuning based on input we receive through teletown halls like this or through the many, many calls we get daily. My coworkers and I have had to reform how we function as an office, but I can tell you we haven't missed a beat, and the calls are coming in fast and furious, and very, very much exchanging information that is helpful.
Thank you, Congressman Tonko. Let me just remind our audience, if they'd like to ask a question, then please press *3. And Congressman, our next question comes from Tracy in Boston Lake. And after you reply, we'd also like to get Dr. Liebers and Leslin to weigh in. Good evening, Tracy.
Hello.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me? Welcome.
I can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And your question or your comments?
I'm wondering if a person tests positive for the antibodies against coronavirus if that means you will not be able to catch the disease. And the second part I wanted to ask is, if you test positive for the antibodies, can you pass it on? Can you still be a carrier and pass it on to someone?
Well, you know, I think you point to the importance of testing. And also, as we've done our testing investment, $75 billion again in HEROES, we're also asking for reporting coming from the administration so that we have a good demographic profile and what happens during that testing period and thereafter, so that we will be fed data that can best advise us. But in terms of the scientific spin that you have in your question, let us refer to our two health experts from Ellis Medicine to best respond to that concern.
Hello, Tracy. This is Dave Liebers from Ellis. Yes, hi. So you're asking a question that we're all asking at this point. For most of viral and even bacterial infections, an antibody present in the blood is associated with immunity. That is a reduced likelihood of getting infected or even complete protection. But there's a great variability with different diseases what the meaning of the antibody is. So currently, even if you have antibody, we are not yet saying that that means that you're immune. So that decisions that we make, perhaps allowing someone to go without protective equipment, for example, or to kind of essentially not adhere to certain guidelines, is not wise. We don't make those decisions in folks who have proven to have antibody here in the hospital. We make them do the same things that everybody else is doing to protect themselves. To the second part of the question, if you have antibody, are you still able to spread the virus if you test positive? That's another question the scientists are really working on. I will say that there is evidence that's accumulating that even, let's say you've been sick for 2 or 3 days, clearly you can pass it on. But perhaps at 2 weeks and you test positive for antibody, there's accumulating scientific evidence that you may not be able to pass the virus. We're hoping that the antibody means you are immune. That's being studied very thoroughly right now. And we're hoping that having antibody also means you are not spreading the virus. We don't know that for sure, but we're hoping that's what we will learn in the not-too-distant future. Right now, though, okay, we're telling everybody antibody does not guarantee that you're immune, period, and does not guarantee you can't spread it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know if, Leslin, you had anything else to add to that or...
So, yes, I just wanted to add that, you know, Dr. Liebers actually responded to the question very well, that the uncertainty with coronavirus and everything that we're doing is actually very new. So the response, we don't know exactly what the end result will be. So hence, it is very important that everyone actually continue to maintain and take the same precautions, as we don't know how this may turn out in the end based on scientific approaches.
Okay. And, you know, it's why in the various iterations, including the HEROES Act, I was very, very supportive of the elements in the bill that dealt with investments in research and in testing and in tracing and in treatment. So as we fund institutions like the National Institutes of Health or the CDC, we know then that we will be guided by best science and research, which is the American way to get this done. We need to walk through it with every bit of information, every bit of science on our side, and data compilation that will come with the demographic reports and studies that will guide us in the most effective manner. So, Cartlin, who do we have next?
Well, Congressman, right now we've got Lorna in Rotterdam on the line with a question that we would like you to weigh in and also get Raymond to weigh in. Good evening, Lorna.
Good evening, Mr. Tonko and everybody. My sister says to say hi. Her name is Heather Bruschetti.
Oh, okay.
I'm really Yeah, so I'm calling because I work in the Schenectady City School District, and I know that budgets are going to be very, very tight. They already were. We have an overpopulation already, and we're going to be cutting positions, obviously, because we can't afford to keep them. So I'm wondering, how are we going to be able to continue to keep these? We're a critical one, trauma one school. So how are we going to be able to keep these children? Whether, I know there might be some kids that stay home or some kids that, you know, who knows what it's going to look like, but how are we going to make sure that everybody is getting what they need? And I mean, I know that that's probably a question you can't answer right now, but it's on my mind.
Sure. We begin to address it, and I think there are more resources required, but HEROES Act provides crucial relief to both the K-12 and higher education communities because they are so significant in training the workforce of the future. And it recognizes the budgetary crisis hitting our K-12 public schools by providing nearly $60 billion in relief funds that can be used to help with teacher retention and to invest in technology and to initiate or strengthen mental health services in our schools. And address sanitation needs and other costs that COVID will undoubtedly require. We know that that isn't as much as we need, but there's been a call so as to triple or quadruple that number. But this is a start, and HEROES will move us down that path of recovery. And again, we'll be guided by the creative qualities that are school leaders and educators will offer us. But, it's important for us to put our thinking caps on and, again, to dig deep to provide the resources that are required.
So one of the things kind
Dr.
of
Cuciello?
Is for the first time ever, we will be holding a ballot all on absentee ballots, and that's on June 9th. And we're asking our communities to support our schools, and that's where it starts at the local level. All of their educators have tried to do the least harm possible with the circumstances we are in. Least harm possible for our students. They didn't bring it about. We're trying to help them through this with teleteaching, which we are really in the embryo stages of teleteaching. We're getting better, but we need to get better with technology and teleteaching. We need support from the local communities. We try to minimize the reduction in forces because these are our families. And we try to look at this from what are they facing every day, trying to teach their youngsters, in some cases, not being able to go to work, having to stay home, not having an income. Our food programs have been very, very successful throughout the region. Our child care support has also been successful. Again, families first. We're trying to really provide as many services and support as we can as we move forward. June 9th is going to be important for 700 school districts in the state, and that is what kind of support do they get at their local level, and where do they go from here? And we are all waiting with bated breath for more stimulus from Washington to help us through some of the things the Congressman said, PPEs, sanitized material, custodial work, extra cleaning, all of those things. Every single community is going to be facing it as we move ahead with our plans. We're supposed to have in the State Ed Department by mid-July three alternative plans, and that is with some of the students coming, with none of the students coming, with half of the students. Again, planning, not certain of where we're going to be, but again, supporting the families has been the most important goal of ours since this began.
Cartney, if I might just add to what Dr. Colucciello just shared, I think it's important for the school votes to have as much certainty wrapped around them as possible. That's why I think there's urgency to passing the HEROES Act now. And I think the fact that the Senate leadership has said file bankruptcy if you're a school system or local government or state government that can't make ends meet, that is just unacceptable. And it's a slap in the face of every frontline and essential worker that risks everything on our behalf. And it's also impractical. We need to make certain the Federal Reserve leadership has even said, yes, the price tag on these bills is immense. To me, it's frightening. But what's more frightening is the even greater bill that's accrued if we don't do anything, and the damage to the economy will be all the greater and will be permanent. So we don't have a choice here but to invest in the now. And I think, again, for certainty in these votes and certainty for planning in our school systems, the Senate needs to take up the HEROES Act immediately. And one other thought, broadband. So there's a down payment in the bill for schools, for students, of broadband. If there's anything we hear during this whole COVID experience is the fact that technology, whether it's telemedicine, telelearning, teleworking, telebusiness, however we implore, we engage technology in our everyday practices, we have learned that is an immense tool. And just like the Rural Electrification Act in the 30s designed itself to get service, electricity to all of America, our modern day utility today is broadband. And I'm on several bills. I'm on an effort to get us universal broadband in this country. I've had a very public debate with FCC because I do not think they've given New York its fair share of broadband. We're going to continue to fight for that. Our schools, our students, our educators need that tool. It's an essential, and we're going to go forward and fight for that effort.
Thank you, Congressman.
Pardon,
if you'd like to ask
next?
Yeah, I just want to remind everyone, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 3. And Congressman Tonko, our next question comes from our online audience. Eric wants to know how we're going to reopen without COVID-19 cases increasing as we try to go back to normal. Congressman?
Are we going to reopen with COVID numbers increasing?
Yes. How are we going to reopen without COVID-19 cases increasing?
Well, I think it's very, you know, I think Dr. Liebers and, you know, our health experts, Leslin, kind of indicated that it is important for us to follow science here and let science rule. I think we don't need to look any farther than the state of New York, our home state, where we practice some very strong science guidelines. We were strict in the messaging that we strongly encourage people to abide by those guidelines, and we saw the flattening of the curve. But now we do see reports out there of a great number of states along the southwest, along the southern border of our country, and up the southeast coastline, and in the heartland of the country, where they're seeing spikes in numbers, a 50% growth in Alabama over the last several days. Because if you open without the encouragement of adhering to the guidelines, the science-driven guidelines, if you don't assume the personal responsibility to keep your neighbors safe by, again, responding to this, it's not about fear of a virus. It's about safety for those around you. It's about inherent individual responsibility where we all have a role to play. So I think that if we do that, we can hope to open with better results. And I don't know if Dr. Liebers has anything he would like to add to that, or Leslin.
Certainly, I would like to add to that. Thank you, Congressman. You said everything perfectly well. When we look at what's going on right now in Alabama and Missouri, based on how they have opened, and you see all the people out in the community, out at the beaches, together, the closeness with no mask, slow and steady will get us there. We cannot move too fast, and we still must adhere to the strict guidelines that's been put out for us from the start of this pandemic. With that said, we also need to remind each other if we see someone not following, you know, what we're supposed to be doing. It's not just about protecting ourselves, but it's also protecting our neighbor and try to decrease that spread. So the goal is to decrease the spread of the COVID-19. We know that we really will not have a handle on this fully until a vaccine is developed. That's it. Dr. Liebers?
So I'll just add, you know, we've learned a lot about this virus since it first appeared December and January in China. And we've really learned how many people are carrying this virus with very little in the way of symptoms or no symptoms whatsoever. Some of these folks will be very efficient spreaders. And when I hear folks talk about why they're not wearing a mask, for example, well, I'm healthy, and if I catch it, I think I'll fight through it. My family's healthy. I'd rather not wear the mask. There's a basic misunderstanding. The idea is wearing the mask in public is protecting everybody else. And this doesn't work unless everybody participates. So it's a team game, understanding it's our responsibility as individual citizens contributing to diminishing the spread by putting that mask on every time we're within 6 feet of another person.
And Courtney, let me just offer a little bit more after what I heard Dr. Liebers and Dr. Williamson say. There's a need for us to have a national strategy. The American public travels, the COVID-19 virus travels. It's important for us in this country to have a national strategy on testing. I know the president released something just this past weekend, but it's kicking it back to the states. And we can't be broken down to individual state compliance and standards. We shouldn't have states competing with each other for testing equipment and PPE. It's just not the best way to do things. And there needs to be example set by all in leadership in this country so that there's not a mixed message that causes confusion and, again, not the best results. So we need to go forward with a national strategy, and we need to continually upscale the efforts to produce the kits. There was all this talk about all the testing kits we were going to produce. We still don't see the numbers we need. We're testing far fewer than would be recommended. And invoking the Defense Production Act robustly could get us the kits that we need. So I thank the questioner for their comments. I think it's a good challenge to all of us, and I think it's something that we all need to embrace wholeheartedly and to do it with a spirit of community where you're protecting your neighbor because you yourself might be asymptomatic. Mark, is there anything a business perspective? Okay.
Mark?
Thank you, Carly.
I am there, but I'll let you get to another question.
Okay. Courtney, what do we have next?
Our next question comes from Diane in Ballston Lake. We'd first like to direct this question to Dr. Cluciello, and then Dr. Liebers, we'd like you to follow up. Good evening, Diane.
Hi. Children in our community have been mostly unaffected by this disease. What are we doing to get them back into the classroom? Distance learning isn't sustainable and has been detrimental to our children. And the CDC guidelines to return the students to the classroom seem rather unrealistic. What are our federal and state leaders doing to assist our school districts? Technology and teleteaching and telelearning cannot replace teaching and socialization. So we kind of are really concerned about our children and how they're suffering through all of this. And just want to kind of get a feel of where you are at in the federal level of, thinking about our children.
So currently we take all of our, all of our guidance from executive orders at the state level or CDC, but we're also under the State Education Department's rule. And we are having to develop plans for going back to school at some point. Thinking about it now, it's about 100 days between now and September. A lot can happen in 100 days. Hopefully some of the things that our doctors have told us about the progress they're making is going to be helpful. But we are having to put together plans for an opening, a staggered opening, maybe part of the students, not all of the students every day. perhaps a morning session, perhaps an afternoon session. All of the regional school districts in this area meet weekly and discuss different types of plans. Again, things have to be a bit on the nimble side because we'll get direction and there'll be new information, and then we'll have to reorient accordingly. But by July 15th, there will be at State Ed, different areas of the state will be submitting plans for different style and different types of openings. We don't know what that'll be. Right now, we know that there will be no in-contact summer school. Summer school will be virtual for students with handicapping conditions, as well as all other students. We got that guideline probably 2 weeks ago. Again, we're planning on what type of a summer session would it be. Obviously, it would all be remote. The congressman talked about some of the areas that we had problems with broadband. We've had to provide some of our students with hotspots. They don't have computers access where they are, and we've had to look at some of the challenges that we bring. I'm confident, though, we're moving slowly, carefully, with always the health of students in mind. I'm often saying to someone, how do you social distance a five-year-old? You know, how do you bring them back safely? And all of those kinds of things we have to look at. What's the nature of the information we have in the next month or two? Whether we'll start in September full-time, no one knows at this point. But I can tell you this, that probably there'll be at least three different options, if not more, that we're currently working on. The nice part about it is it's a regional approach, and it's looking at the science and the health, always looking at that part of it. We know learning's important, but we also know that we've got to keep each of our kids and our families safe. So I don't have the answer to the plan now, but I do know that it will be ready in time for us to review. We're involving the community in some of these plans development as well, so that not only our local health department, but educators, parents are all involved in the discussions at this point.
Hi, Diane, Dr. Leavers. So you're absolutely right regarding the impact of this illness on individual children. The vast majority of serious illness with COVID-19 occurs in adults, and as most of us have heard and know, that the risk of severe illness and death really is proportional to age in part, and also with the common medical comorbidities of cardiovascular disease, and diabetes, and obesity in particular. We have learned that not all children, however, have benign courses. And you know, you've probably read about the post-COVID inflammatory process that looks a lot like an old disease called Kawasaki disease, where children will develop fever, skin rash, and organ failure, such as kidney failure, cardiac disease, and sometimes shock, and we've had some deaths. We've had well over 100 cases here in New York State recognized. And this was a situation an outcome of COVID that wasn't recognized back in China, France, or even Italy. So we've seen that here in this country, probably due to our astute clinicians here. We still, I think know a lot more about a couple of things before September rolls around. One is various communities that were alluded to. What is the prevalence and ongoing spread in that community? We'll also know how important the asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic carriage in children is in spreading COVID-19 to the community. There are studies actually looking at that. Who is really causing spreading? We know young adults are big. We don't know how important children are. So I think understanding the prevalence in a particular community, learning more about how children might maintain transmission within a community because of the difficulty in distancing, which really, as you said, how do you socially distance a five-year-old? You can't do it. And hopefully we'll know more about the impact of or the significance of antibody testing and that kind of thing. So I think we have a lot to learn. We've learned a lot in a couple of months. We'll learn a lot more as the weeks and months go on.
Thank you very much. Congressman, our next question comes from Donald in Schenectady that we'd like to direct to Dr. Liebers and Dr. Williamson. Good evening, Donald.
Oh, thank you, Courtney.
Donald?
Yeah,
Donald,
I'm here.
Are you with us?
Yes. 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 So I guess my question is, so my daughter who lives in Brooklyn had symptoms of COVID-19, loss of smell, loss of taste, very mild, back in April. And then she only was able to get a test last Friday. And she tested positive for both antibodies and for COVID, and while her roommates did not. And so is it possible that she had the virus back in April and is still testing positive for COVID-19?
Yes, absolutely. And we've seen many examples of this, a very prolonged positivity and also prolonged positivity with development of antibody. A lot of science is being conducted right now to try to understand the significance of that positive test vis-a-vis the ability to transmit virus. And there's a lot of accumulating evidence to suggest that the positive test alone does not mean you're still able to transmit virus or that you're still actually infected with a viable virus or virus that we can actually cultivate. The test that we do called the PCR detects fragments of RNA that are unique to this particular strain of coronavirus, but those fragments of RNA may hang around for a long time after the viruses themselves are no longer actively replicating. So, you know, I think it's very unlikely your daughter is still transmitting virus. And again, as I said earlier, we're hoping that that presence of antibody will be in the future shown to be evidence of immunity.
Courtney, who do we have next?
Congressman, next we've got Sarah in Saratoga on the line with a question we'd like to direct to Mark. Good evening, Sarah.
Hi, I just had a couple questions about restaurant opening. Like, obviously you can't work. Like, how long do you think it'll be till we can have full capacity? And also, I have a connection to someone who works for a PPE company, and I was wondering if there is a need for that, especially coming the fall, and if there's any way to make that connection and help people, you know, get what they need or buy what they need.
So this is Leslyn. I thank you for asking the question. And PPE, I will begin to say that, is something that we're always in need of and we will never turn them down. The only thing that we have to be cautious about is the type of PPE. And as an example, there are different types of masks that the CDC approves in this country that we can use and should use. And there are some that we may get from China that are not the ones that are approved for us to use, such as the N95 mask versus the KN95 mask. So we do actually get information and we connect with the vendor or anyone that you'd like us to speak to who could be a potential person to help us you know, secure supplies, but then we have to ensure that the PPE will be of value for us to use to protect, again, us, the community, the patients, and everyone around us. So we have to make sure it's the right type that will work based on where we are in the healthcare setting.
And this is Mark to your question about the restaurants. As you know, the phases in restaurants will be in phase three. So in most of the congressmen districts, that's going to be in about 2.5 to 3 weeks from now.
And you know, as you're probably well aware, it's going to be starting with it's going to be limited seating, and then I think really it's going to be opening almost really with the congressman's opening comments. I think science is going to dictate it. If all of a sudden we you know you can find that, you know, they can go from 50% to 75%, but I think, you know, and Dr. Liebers might have a different take on it, but I have a hard time seeing a restaurant being able to have 100% capacity until we have the vaccine. I think we're. I don't think people are going to be. I don't think the average person is going to be comfortable enough. You know, the congressman made the comment, you know, this weekend. I think a lot of us saw on the news people in the Lake of the Ozarks and places, and I think most of us, when we saw those images, that we were horrified by that. So I think that it's not just that the government's going to say how many people can be in a restaurant. I think patrons will determine if they're going to want to go into a restaurant if there's too many people there. And to your PPE question, as Leslin said, there's a lot that the hospitals can't use, but most of our employers can. So if you have a local supplier and you want to send me an email with their information, my email is megan, E-A-G-A-N, at capitalregionchamber.com. Because I think at this point, as a lot of businesses are preparing, getting their PPE for their openings, whether it's in the next week or the next month, there still is a shortage for supplies at this time.
Well, Congressman, our next question comes from Michael in Half Moon that Dr. Cuccello would like to direct to you. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening, and good evening, Congressman, and all of our guests. Thank you for having this town hall and having all your subject matter experts with you to answer our questions. I have two questions. The first one may be a quick answer. It is sort of rumored that our students may not receive full credit for their school year. And if that's the case, you know, what can be done to resolve that?
Right.
And my other question was, with the, you know, the pandemic and all the money that both the state and federal government are spending, do you see that this may affect our taxes?
So let me take the first one, Michael, and that is students being, in effect, punished because of COVID-19. We have a statement. We say, do no harm. And I would be very, very surprised if a student in any capacity were done harm because of the COVID. As a matter of fact, if you go to each of the school district websites, you'll find they've got an explanation of how they're going to grade each quarter. Usually it's based on some of the work that they finished up to the time they left, March 18th, March 13th, and then additional work. But we understand that in some school districts, some poverty, high poverty area, where the Congress said broadband doesn't exist, how do we bring that against the student when they didn't have a chance to do it, even though we've supplied some of the technology, and some of them are not accustomed to. So our really mantra is do no harm. And I don't think I've heard of any cases where, because of COVID-19, some of our students are going to suffer from this. And as a matter of fact, our teachers are looking at ways to make it possible for them to have as much progress slated and given to them as possible, even though some of them are having a real tough time with teleteaching and telelearning. So number one, I would hope that we do no harm when this happens. The second part with the tax issue, I think the congressman has alluded to some of the federal funds that are available. All of the school districts in the region that I am aware of are trying to keep the taxes the lowest possible. They understand what their families are going through, some of them working, some of them not working, some of them having to stay home and babysit. And so we understand, we know, because since school started, since school closed, we've given out 86,000 meals in one community. So we understand the hardship. So most of the communities have worked very, very hard at keeping the tax rate as low as possible. However, we understand some of the costs that we're going to be incurring, cleaner buildings, using more materials,
using and spending more time on cleaning. All of those are going to cost more money. Money for technology, so that these students, if they are going to be with us part of the time, still have an ability to keep learning. So the two things I would say, Michael, is number one, do no harm. If you check the students, the website for the school districts, each of them tells about grading during that quarter, and we've all worked together so that we've tried to make this as positive as possible under the worst conditions possible. Taxes, we all understand it, under especially times like this. We are dependent upon the federal stimulus package, and we continue to be because these are all new costs. Just to have our election is about a $50,000 bill to mail out all of the 14,000 voting ballots. Just something we've never incurred before in the state of New York, and that is total absentee ballots. So along with these costs come additional costs, but primarily looking at it from, let's focus on the health and safety. Those costs must be incurred, and those costs have to be taken care of. While at the same time, don't forget the taxpayer. Thanks, Michael, for the question.
Courtney, if I could just add to the statement made by Dr. Colucciello. And Michael, I think it's important for us to look at what can be done from the federal level to avoid the growth of regressive property taxes, which oftentimes pick up where state and federal funds don't respond. And so I think it's important for us to recognize the school system funding that is part of the $60 billion package in HEROES and the assistance to state governments where we are enabling them to offer their best commitment to education by filling those holes that came into their budget because of COVID-19. And I think both of those are efforts to make certain that a maintenance of effort can be carried forth. I also, while I have the line here, I wanted to make mention that there are many lessons we can learn from this COVID experience. And to the question just before this about PPE and the like, the fact that there is not the stockpiling in case of a pandemic, the fact that we undid pandemic experts that respond to the National Security Council is a frightening thing. What if this pandemic comes back with a vengeance? Or what if we get hit by some pandemic unheard of that is even more severe than this? So hopefully there are lessons learned here so that we stockpile and that we have that sort of stability and certainty that is part of our response to pandemic planning for the future, and that we also look at the supply chain issues that have impacted us so severely. We need to invest in advanced manufacturing and shore up our manufacturing sector so that there is a greater strength of independence that we can drive for this nation so that we're not relying on nations that may not be our friends or our friendliest souls out there for the requirements that we need in a pandemic. So I think that hopefully those lessons will be learned and we'll go forward with the investment in the supply chain opportunity and stockpiling. Courtney, who do we have next?
Thank you. Well, actually, Congressman, we're almost out of time here. So before I turn it over to you for some closing remarks, I would like to remind everyone that if we weren't able to get to your question or comment this evening, please remain on the line. And at the end of the call, you can leave a voicemail, leave your name, address, email address, and your question or comment. Congressman Tonko?
Well, thank you so much. And thank you to all who joined us this evening. Look, I think it's important for us to recognize that we're in the midst of a pandemic. I think we're far from being through it thoroughly. And that we continue to do what is necessary in Washington as a Congress in the face of this national crisis. We recall that and keep in mind that America has it does remain as the hardest hit nation in the world. And we've responded as a Congress to this crisis by delivering vital support for workers, for families, for small businesses, for our hospitals, our nursing homes, our mental health service providers, and the list goes on and on. We, I believe, with the HEROES Act, are indicating that there is urgency, that there's a need for this investment. Again, the alternative is much more threatening to our economy and will provide permanent damage to our economy, something we simply cannot afford. And to again, make certain that we fight for those things that really matter from a national public health response, and that is testing, contact tracing, treatment, and the work for research, for vaccines, and further treatment. I think all of that is very, very important. But America has been asking for support for their local governments. They know that they don't want to add to any further swelling of the ranks of the unemployed. They don't want essential services abruptly stopped. And they know that, you know, this is part of a team effort to provide relief for our local governments, especially as we recognize just overnight that we now have lost 100,000 Americans. For those who say wait for the HEROES Act in terms of response to the HEROES Act, I rhetorically ask, wait for what? Another 100,000 deaths? Wait for another 1.7 million cases? Wait for further devastation to individuals and families? Wait for more damage done to the revenue streams of our hospitals and nursing homes? I don't think wait is an answer. I don't think filing for bankruptcy is an answer. I don't think that America wants to wait and have more damage impacting us. I think it's a way to go forward with a sound plan of investment. I thank our guests tonight, our experts. Thank you, Dr. Liebers. Thank you, Dr. Williamson. Thank you, Dr. Colucciello. And thank you, Mark Egan. All of you have lent greatly to the discussion this evening. Thank you, Kartney, for facilitating so well. And most importantly, thank you all for joining us in this teletown hall. It's your input, your guidance, your concern, and your experience that continues to encourage us to fine-tune our response as we move forward as a nation. And we will. I'm optimistic that we will walk through this the only way we can, with science and evidence on our side. Let's respect each other's opportunities here and each other's lives as we go forward with response to the guidelines that have been developed by the science-based community. So thank you, one and all, and thank you for joining us again.